barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20. 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Whoa, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
It is Thursday, September 29th, and it is actually Thursday today because yesterday was Wednesday, but I said it was Thursday. So now we got two Thursdays in a row. Lucky us. Everyone loves a Thursday, but we skipped hump day. My apologies to all of you that thought it was Thursday, so you didn't get your freak on. That's on me. I own that. We are going to talk. Here's the conversation today. We're going to talk about the weekend's games. We obviously have today and tomorrow to preview them, but. So we're going to talk about a couple of them today, but the real conversation here I have for you is there's a lot of hype going into the season about this zone six receiver group at Ohio State. The question I have for you is who are the top five receivers? First of all, just in the comments, drop who you think the best wide receiver is in the Big Ten through four games, because it's a different conversation to say, oh, who's actually the best? Like Jaxon Smith-Njigba is probably the best, but he hasn't played, so he can't be one of the top five through four games, right? Who's the best receiver in the Big Ten? Through four games, who do you think it is? I'm curious in the comments. We're going to talk about that conversation. I'm going to break it down, give you my thoughts. We're also going to talk about all the whole slate. Kentucky has to go to Ole Miss. Alabama has to go to Auburn. Baylor and Oklahoma State Arkansas. Are matching up. I mean, there's some big games this weekend, so we're going to talk about all of them. And Chris.
Yes.
Rookie of the month. Let's talk about it, man.
Your guy, man. So first of all, shout out to you. I mean, you brought a good group of three in. Before obviously we started this platform and they're all balling in the league, or the two are that are playing. Garrett Wilson's playing phenomenally, but this is about Chris Olave, who plays such a unique style of football for a receiver and has been wildly successful and wildly efficient. He just won NFL Rookie of the Month playing for the Saints. Super impressed. There's been like no drop off for him. He's super talented.
Well, that's what people, so many, I mean, I just got it. I'm live on TikTok too right now. And I just got the question, who's going to have a better year, Olave or Wilson? And I don't want it. I'm not going to take away from how good Garrett is, because I think Garrett might, you know, has a top 10 potential in the NFL. But my answer is always the same. It's going to be Chris Olave just because of the situation, right? The situation in New Orleans is far better than the situation in New York with the Jets. So Garrett or Chris was going to have the better rookie year no matter what. And he might fuck around and win rookie of the year. Mm-hmm. So unbelievable.
He's now the co-favorite.
Yeah, unbelievable month for Chris, and if he just keeps making plays, man, just keeps playing and keeps going, he's going to have a hell of a rookie campaign. So, and I would have predicted it too. He's that good of a player.
Number one in receiving yards among all rookies, and then number three is Garrett Wilson. So, like, just the start that these two have had is really exceptional. He had a big week last week. He gets open. I've never seen a route runner like him, Zach. I don't know if you have, based on what you've watched. He's so smooth, gets in and out of breaks, and is so deceptive without being, like, hyper-twitchy, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
But the kid's always open, man, and he's really a player, and I'm really excited about Chris because he's one of the really good people that you've talked about as well.
He's an awesome kid. Awesome kid. And he's yeah, he deserves everything he's getting. And I think he's twitchy, he's fast, he's explosive, but he gets in and out of cuts so efficiently. I mean, he's so fluid that's what makes him different. His ball skills are good. They might be really good, but they're not elite, but they're really good. So that's the one thing I think he could continue to work on. Not that I've seen him have many drops in the NFL, but just, you know, over his career, specifically, and also in practice. He has really good ball skills. Nothing crazy. Not like Michael Thomas or anything nuts.
Shout out
Chris Olave, Rookie of the Month.
Future Rookie of the Year. You ready to call it?
Oh, yeah. I called it before the year. Oh, yeah, I said Chris Olave is going to be the Rookie of the Year.
You also said like an All-Pro in the first 4 years, which...
Yeah, he'll be an All-Pro within the first 3 years, probably 4 years.
I can see that as well. I love the kid, and him and Garrett are going to have big-time careers. I mean, I call Garrett like just skinny Jamar Chase, and I have no comparison for Olave. Like, is he Justin Jefferson-esque? He's not as big. Like what is Chris Olave? So just happy for the success he's having. But Zach, how are you feeling, man?
I feel great.
Mm-hmm. You know, you're at, like, you're in circle after circle. You're a celebrity in Miami. I mean,
Miami spaces are nuts, and we don't need to go back down that.
They
that
want
path
you. They want Zach. They went from hating Zach to want Zach.
Now they do. Man, they hated me 48 hours ago, and now some of them are like, I don't know what they're thinking. Like, let's go get him over Gattis. I don't know. I don't. Bro, I'm not going to Miami. Your resume. So don't worry about it.
They looked up your resume, Zach, is what happened.
Yeah,
and that's when people started tripping about like Michael Thomas and about Terry McLaurin and about like the Paris Campbell, like the guys you had. Everyone started tripping about that because somebody put a side by side with your resume next to Josh Gattis's, and like the difference in money, the difference in stats, and all that. So that's what it is. I see my guy Austin's in the chat. But all right, Zach, we got a big week of football coming up, but you are the wide receiver expert, so we want to talk about the Big Ten's best receivers and kind of where they are in terms of like prowess nationally, maybe. So Zach, where do the guys rank? What do you got?
Well, here I want to talk about him generally, and I'll give you a lot like I did with the running backs. I'll give you my pecking order at the end, right? But I think that the big ones that everyone will talk about and preseason people talked about was obviously number one was Jackson Smith and Jigba. We left him off the list because he's been injured. He can't be one of the top five players in the Big Ten through four games. But then it goes to the Ohio. You start with the Ohio State duo that was a trio. Now it's a duo, and you start with Emeka Egbuka, who I think's had an outstanding start to the 2022 season. I mean, he's the number two the second most efficient receiver in the slot. He averages 4.06 yards per route run. He's the third most productive receiver overall in the Big Ten. He's the fourth most productive receiver versus man coverage in the Big Ten, and he's the most productive receiver in the country against zone coverage. Now, here's the thing about these rankings and these stats and these analytics, that here's where you have to understand football before you just spit the shit out there and say, well, that means he's XYZ. There hasn't been enough of a body of work to really identify who's the best receiver versus man coverage, right? Emeka Egbuka has gotten more production versus zone coverage than anyone in the Big Ten. The main reason is because most of these teams have played zone coverage against Ohio State because they don't want to man them up, right? So until we get more man coverage reps, to sit here and say that he's the fourth best against man, that's not entirely accurate, or it might not be. Maybe it is, but we don't have enough of a data set to actually evaluate that. I mean, he has the second most receiving yards in the Big Ten at 111 yards per game, and just kind of by comparison, if he continues down this average, down this path, he will have 1,437 yards in a 13-game season. And obviously, they could play 14 or 15. So he'll be almost a 1,500-yard receiver if he just keeps playing the way he's playing. So I think he's been outstanding. He's the top receiver on intermediate throws, those NFL throws, not counting the deep balls because Ohio State hasn't been hitting deep balls. Mm-hmm. But those intermediate NFL throws, he's the most productive receiver in the Big Ten. He's averaging 17.44 yards per route run on intermediate routes, which
per
is just
route run. That's absurd.
Astronomical.
Is that tops in the nation as well? That has to be up there.
Oh, I honestly didn't look it up, but it's got to be way up there because that's an absurd stat that I just threw out there. Then you look at Marvin Harrison Jr., struggled a little bit against Notre Dame, has played really well in the ensuing three games, right? Arkansas State, Toledo, and now Wisconsin. He has the fourth most yards in the Big Ten, which would put him, if he stays on pace, at around 1,250, like 1,250 right. yards. So you might have 2,000-yard receivers, especially the longer Jackson Smith and Jigba is hurt, because they really have two main targets, and they found a third in Cade Stover and potentially a fourth in Julian Fleming. So those are the two for Ohio State. I think they haven't lived up to the hype yet, but they're getting there.
Why do you think Marv has struggled so far, Zach, if you had to put it? Is it kind of not separating? Is it poor routes being run? Like, no, he's so freaky talented. Why do you think it hasn't clicked for him yet?
It's not that he struggled. He struggled in the Notre Dame game, and that's it. And I think it was the first time he went against, you know, decent corners. I mean, Utah's secondary was depleted when he went off. And then, you know, obviously in training camp, he went against great, you know, probably the best corners he's went against to date. But I think Notre Dame came out and they played aggressive press. And Marv's biggest weakness is hand-to-hand combat. And Notre Dame was holding him, grabbing him. And that shit, you can complain about it all you want. That's a part of football at the college level. In the NFL, he won't have to deal with that. But those kids were grabbing and pulling him. And he wasn't violent enough and physical enough with his hands. So he got covered a lot. And so that's the biggest thing I think he needs to improve, is becoming a more physical player, a more violent player.
When will Ohio State see more man? Like, because we talked about getting a man data set, but everyone's going to try to keep everything in front, aren't they?
Yeah, not everybody. Every defense is different. I mean, okay. I mean, you in Michigan especially will play man coverage against Ohio State. They have the talent, at least they believe, to do that. They did it last year, honestly. And I did the whole Michigan breakdown and broke down and watched Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson not get locked down as people thought they did because they were open. I mean, they got open consistently. It was just a conglomeration of problems that led to the perfect failure storm. Mm-hmm. On offense. Yeah, and it was mostly just they got their ass kicked. It wasn't that the zone six got locked down or anything like that. So those are the two Ohio State receivers. Then I think next you really have to go to Michigan, right? They have Ronnie Bell. They have Roman Wilson. Roman Wilson has been unreal. Now, as I did with running backs and Blake Corum, they've played the worst schedule in college football. So it doesn't mean he's not. It just means he might not be, right? And he's the most productive receiver in the slot, the second most productive receiver in the Big Ten overall, over Emeka and Marvin Harrison Jr. He's the leads the Big Ten in yards per catch at 24 and a half yards every catch he makes. Jeez. So he's been dynamic against bad teams, but dynamic.
Well, do you worry about the amount of catches, though?
I mean, it's not that I worry about it. They blew out their first three opponents. Like he hit his shots, and then they didn't really have to go to him much. He's going to have a ton more catches when they play better teams.
Yeah,
and that's my point.
The eight catches on the year is tough for me to kind of justify him.
Yeah, it's two catches a game. I mean,
and the skill set's up there for sure.
Yeah, the first three games, they played starters for probably two quarters. So he really, if you look at that, if they played better opponents, he would have 16 catches right now. But they didn't. So that's where you can't hold it against them. Entirely. Like you can put that in the front of your mind, like, all right, he's putting up these numbers. We have to put an asterisk by him because they haven't played a defense worth a shit yet. Mm-hmm. But he's still been really fucking good. Right. And Ohio State did play Arkansas State and Toledo, right? But they also played Notre Dame and Wisconsin. So you kind of their competition level was higher, but not much higher.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No. Now, the other players that I think are in consideration, Rakim Jarrett at Maryland. I mean, we watched what he could do against Michigan and really, really all year so far. He's the most productive receiver versus man coverage in the Big Ten right now, averaging 4.6 yards per route run anytime someone lines up and plays man coverage on him. So that's an impressive stat. The only issue I have with Rakim Jarrett is he also leads the Big Ten in drops. That's not something you typically would like to be the conference leader in. He's already dropped three balls this year. His ball skills are something to keep an eye on.
Suspect a little bit.
I see my son's on TikTok now. There you go. Cam is in the chat. So that, but anyways, that's something you need to keep an eye on, right? Is how his ball skills play out the rest of the year. So he is definitely in the top five. And then the one guy that no one is talking about, right? Now, granted, he's been targeted. I think he has something absurd. I didn't write down. Oh, I don't have the numbers. But anyway, Charlie Jones from Purdue. He goes against Penn State, has 12 catches for 153 yards and one touchdown. He leads the Big Ten in yards, touchdowns, you name it. Now, he does have 15 more catches than Emeka Egbuka. He does have 20 more catches than Marv. I think he has 61 catches. He is the second most targeted receiver in the Big Ten with the sixth best reception percentage. He catches 80% of his targets, which is pretty high. Not as high as you'd like it to be, but pretty high. my guy, our menace chat's going off on my phone. Say, hey, tell Cam to get back in school and get off of TikTok. Just my son has walking pneumonia right now. He hasn't been in school all week, but he's on antibiotics and should be doing better soon. And he better be resting right now. Oh, but I'm letting TikTok interrupt the show. So those are the five receivers, kind of how I break them down, Chris. And then there's a group of other players that I think are relevant in the conversation. They just haven't been as productive yet. And that group is Chris Autman-Bell at Minnesota, I think is a really good player. Parker Washington at Penn State, I think could be a really good player. Ronnie Bell at Michigan hasn't had as much production as Roman Wilson, but I think he's someone that will be on every list at the end of the year. And then Isaiah Williams at Illinois is an interesting one because he's a freak talent. Mm-hmm. And we got King Bronco. So Isaiah Williams is a kid from St. Louis that I actually recruited. They hired his high school coach at Illinois to get him. And I think he's a dynamic playmaker. So that's kind of the ones in contention, Chris. Before I get your reaction and before I rank them, our guys in the chat, King Bronco in the building. He's dropping his knowledge. JJ be wrecking them farms, boys. Ain't no way them cats be ripping Nerf herders because they ain't got them corn stalls putting down. There you go. That's why. That's why JJ is the best receiver in the Big Ten.
Thanks, partner. Thanks, partner.
Don't know
partner.
What he was saying. Oh, I didn't know Altman Bell's out for the year. I didn't realize that. Well, then he won't be in the list. But I think he was one of the best receivers in the Big Ten going into the year. And I think he would have been on that list if he didn't get hurt. I didn't realize he was out for the year. But there you go.
If I'm projecting moving forward, I think Ohio State has three of the top six. Looking at that, I do think it's hard for me to go any other direction than a guy like Charlie Jones being kind of the top of that list, just because he's a baller and everyone knows the ball's going to him. I know it doesn't. I think he averages what, like 14 yards per catch, and he has 41 catches already this year. So obviously that's a case of him being funneled the ball. But to me, he is kind of the class of where I'm at the Big Ten. Everyone knows it's coming. It's coming anyway. And obviously he benefits from having a guy like Aiden O'Connell. I do think Emeka is either one or two for me. I think Emeka can do a lot that others can't. I want to see more from Marv. And the guy that I think is going to be coming on strong here pretty soon, now that he's healthy, is Julian Fleming. Like we've seen, I've just seen enough flashes from him to think that he could end up cracking the top six or seven. Right now, I don't think he's better than a guy like Rakeem Jarrett, who I think is an absolute baller and can do more, and he's more versatile than Julian Fleming. That's one that I definitely have circled kind of moving forward. Ronnie Bell I like a lot, but if you take away the one long 60 or 49 yard touchdown, then he does look pretty pedestrian, and also nothing's really translated into touchdowns like the other guys. So,
well, here's the thing about Michigan's receiver group is they don't fucking make it. Just doesn't make sense.
It doesn't,
because I watched Ronnie Bell play. I think he's a really good player. Mm-hmm. Further to the point, I watched a true freshman, Andrell Anthony, was lights out. Going and I know Michigan State was awful in the throw game and pass defense, but he was unreal in that game. And he doesn't even play for Michigan. So it's just, I get it. I know Roman Wilson is kind of their guy right now, but Ronnie Bell is not some average receiver. Like, that's someone that Ohio State is going to have. It's going to take everything they have to stop him, within the constructs of this Michigan offense.
No, I agree. It is an interesting case, because I'd have to sit down and watch more Michigan. I don't know if they rotate so many guys so guys can get into rhythm, but it feels like they have like three or four playmakers outside, and yet only one of them is allowed to have a game at a time. Like, this can only be the Ronnie Bell game, or this can only be the Andrell Anthony game. Like, we can't share any of this, which makes it a little bit tougher for me to evaluate those guys. But I think Emeka is top two in the Big Ten, and I think Emeka will finish the year top five in the nation. That good. And when we heard Ryan Day talk about when JSN went down, a lot of the kind of playbook was like, uh-oh, like that's who things were going, or like being based around. And I think Emeka started sliding in that role a little bit better, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it did. There are two different conversations here: who has been and who will be. Yeah, right.
I think Charlie Jones has been the best receiver in the Big Ten up until this point.
So I disagree, Chris, because just because a guy's gotten 20 more catches than another player doesn't mean they're a better player. I mean, he gets targeted. That Jeff Brohm offense, and Aiden O'Connell's great. He's been targeted a shitload. I don't think that means he's a better player than another player. I do think he's, I mean, I have him third on my list, so I'll give you my list. My list, I think Emeka Egbuka has been the best receiver in the Big Ten. Point blank, I think he's been outstanding through four games, hasn't had a bad game. He's really started blocking well in the Wisconsin game specifically. He's so valuable to this offense that they had to pull him off of the return game for the most part. I have him at one. I have Roman Wilson at two. I actually would put Roman above Emeka just based on production in 4 weeks, except for the fact that they played no one and he has minimal targets comparatively. Not entirely his fault, kind of situational. That will certainly even out as the season goes on. But I have him at two. I have Charlie Jones at three, only because I think those two players that I just talked about would have done more already with that amount of touches.
That's super fair.
Than Charlie Jones has done. Now, that's not to take anything away from him. I mean, everyone knows he's getting the ball, and he went off against Penn State for over 100 yards and a touchdown and 12 catch. He just went off. So he belongs on the list. I can't put him over two other players, because that's very Heisman Trophy-ish to me. Like, okay, let's just fucking sort the conference by stats and just there's your top five. Like, I'm trying to just who has been the best player, regardless if they get a lot of touches or not. Like, who's been the best player? Mm-hmm. So Charlie Jones at three. I have Marvin Harrison Jr. at four, because I see the potential. He's played really well the last three games. He's not higher, because in the one time that he played probably the best corners that he's played all year, he kind of got locked down and he wasn't as physical as he needs to be. So I have him at four. Rakeem Jarrett at five, only because you can't drop the football as a receiver. I think he's played better than Marv outside of his drops, but he's got to go below Marvin, because he's just dropped too many footballs.
That's a really good list. And obviously, like, we'll learn more when we get more data points. Like, we need more data points, like you said, about, like, who's better at beating man, like, you know, who's better after the catch, all that. So it definitely is an interesting note. It is crazy because I think, like, unless you're a really, really hardcore Big Ten or college football fan, like, you didn't know who Charlie Jones was. Like, that kid kind of broke onto the scene early and it's been really good. But a lot of these names, I think Emeka's going to end the year as the best of the group, though. I mean, he could just do more than everybody else, in my opinion. Yeah. Like, he can do the things behind the line of scrimmage that Raheem Jarrett can do. He can do the things down the field that that Charlie Jones can do. The only thing we haven't seen from him yet is kind of high point footballs in the red zone. And that's because he hasn't really been asked to do it because we've been able to run the ball in the red zone. So, I mean, it is crazy. If you had to float with number six, would you go Julian Fleming in there just based on what he could and couldn't do? Okay.
Nope. No, Julian hasn't shown anything yet. I mean, he played well against Wisconsin. All they did was play zone coverage. He caught like two balls that I thought were like, okay, that's a good play. But it wasn't a challenge. It wasn't a test. And prior to that game, I haven't seen him do anything. So I think he's trending that way. And if he, you know, it's obviously the greatest thing about football is you have the opportunity to improve, right? He's going to be on the field a ton until Jackson Smith and Jigba gets back. And so he's going to have the opportunity to go against man coverage and beat somebody in man. And I just haven't seen it yet. So he doesn't belong. He's not in the top 10 yet, but I think he could get into the top 10, you know, when he gets those opportunities, if he shows up and wins.
Depending on JSN, I legitimately feel like there's a chance that Ohio State could have three of the top five receivers in the Big Ten. And I don't think that's too far of a stretch, considering we saw it last year. I think Emeka is going to, again, continue to elevate. I think Marv is going to continue to elevate as well. And then I've seen enough from Julian to feel really good about his trajectory. But again, you must
be watching practice film then, because he hasn't done anything to make that an accurate take. But to your point, the minute Jackson Smith and Jigba comes back healthy, they have three of the top receivers in the Big Ten.
Yeah. Well, I guess like what I've seen from Julian in terms of like just, you know, basic understanding and feel for the game.
Hard.
And, yeah, I mean catch and run, like with the ball in his hands, I think he's one of the probably four most dangerous guys in the Big Ten.
I think he's made one guy miss so far all year.
No. And he ran somebody else over. I don't know. I like his upside. Maybe it's just a gut feeling. I don't know. Who knows? Who knows?
Gut feeling.
Who knows? What's he got? Like three touchdowns on the year? Four touchdowns? Two.
Yeah.
Okay, Zach. Okay.
Well, he's only played in one game, really. So it's not, I mean, number of touchdowns is not, I mean, if he had two touchdowns in every game, he'd have eight and lead the Big Ten. So
yeah,
he just didn't play in the first three, really. So it is what it is. We'll see. I got to see him do it against good competition and get open against man. That's it.
Yeah. I'm projecting. I just think he's just too talented not to be one of the top five receivers in the Big Ten, considering the other receivers they have. Yeah. But all right, Zach. Big week college football coming.
Big week, Chris. Big week. But I want to get to first our partner, MyBookie. It's our go-to place for all sports gambling. If you want to bet single games, spreads, parlays, player props, I got two picks for you today to use. Tonight's a big matchup, Bengals-Dolphins, Thursday night football, Joe Burrow versus Tua Tagovailoa. It's going to be a fun matchup. I've already locked in a couple bets. I'm going to give you my two favorite ones right now. They came from our handicapping team. I already placed them on MyBookie. All you got to do is go to MyBookie.ag. Use promo code Menace and they'll deposit match. You put in $500, they'll give you $500, all the way up to $1,000. If you want $1,000 free dollars, go put $1,000 in my bookie. You'll get $1,000 free dollars. So you immediately double your money. You win your first bet. But here's my picks, Chris, from Menace to Picks for my bookie. My bookie promo code Menace. Bengals -3. I'm going to buy the hook. I hate hooks. I like hookers, hate hooks, right? But I'm going to buy the hook, go to -3. Bengals -3. And then Joe Burrow over 11.5 yards rushing, because for no other reason than this offensive line's not much better than it was. He's going to scramble. He's going to get his yards. So those are my two locks. Lock them in on MyBookie right now. Promo code Menace, free deposit match. MyBookie is a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet and simple to win. So go over there, use our promo code, and lock in those two bets. And let's start the weekend off on a heater at MyBookie.
Love it. Perfect.
Sorry, Chris, just had to get the people what they wanted.
I'll do your thing.
I
want to hit like two super chats, Zach, and then let's
go ahead.
Let's talk a little bit. Let me scroll up a little bit. Okay, here we go. A couple super chats, and then we're going to get into the big preview of the week. Shout out to our guy, Andrew. Thank you for the five. How much better would the trio of Ginn, Holmes, and Gonzo have been if they played in Urban's, Florida, or Day's Ohio State offense?
Oh, my gosh. They would have been ridiculous. Ridiculous in either. Even more ridiculous in Ryan's offense, but even in Urban's offense, they would have been unreal. Like, Ted Ginn would have had so many trick plays and packages, it would have been absurd.
This will be something we touch on more tomorrow. Thank you, Matt, for the two. Just me, or did our DBs look better without Burke? Well, we were playing Wisconsin's wide receivers. Yeah,
the DBs look better because Wisconsin stinks. Mm-hmm. Now, Denzel Burke also got torched by Arkansas State, so it's not like – I mean, that kid's probably the best receiver Ohio State's defense had to cover, though. I mean, so you could take the logo off his helmet. At the end of the day, that kid was probably better than Notre Dame's skill and Wisconsin's skill.
Ooh, this is a good – because this is about your era. Thank you for the five. Side question to settle a debate with a friend. Was Curtis Samuel a running back or a wide receiver at Ohio State? I realize he was the age, but
– No, he was way more – I mean, his last 2 years he was in my meeting room, he was far more a receiver than a running back. He still – since he had learned running back his freshman year, he still had that understanding and had that skill set, and then I coached him up on the run game when he would motion in the backfield. But by far, the majority of his touches were in the throw game, by far.
Heard. Thank you for the two. Washington, Michigan, Alabama money line doubles your pay. Okay, we hear you.
I like that. There's another my bookie parlay. Mm-hmm. I actually really like that.
We hear you.
Until we get to the Alabama game here in a second, but never mind that.
All right, Zach, let's talk Bama. Bama gets Arkansas. Kind of a weird thing. You're a little bit in the portal, Zach, and that's what we're talking about, but we're working on getting you back. Arkansas, they just lost last week to Texas A&M. Kind of a weird game. We thought they would win. We were kind of waiting for people to have more respect for KJ Jefferson. Then they go lose that game. They do get Bama. This is an interesting stretch. I think that if Bama's going to lose one, it's going to be in the next 3 weeks. Do you think Bama is safe this week?
So here's the deal, right? Arkansas's biggest weakness right now is their secondary. They lost their best safety, and they lost a starting corner in Ladarius Bishop. They're out for the year. So that's their biggest weakness, is in the air, in the throw game. It's going to come down to this. Do Bama receivers actually fucking show up? I mean, that's what's going to come down to, because if they play like they have played, they played better last week, but if they play like they have played through the first, third of the season, Arkansas is going to win this game. If they don't, if they show up and actually, I mean, it's fucking crazy. If they just go hard and get their depth and run good routes, Bama will win. So it's impossible to project. It's one of those things where you say, all right, I can't imagine Nick Saban doesn't have this fixed, because that's a fixable issue. It's not like they don't have any wideouts. It's that they don't execute and play well. And that's something that you really have to bet against Nick Saban fixing an issue. So I might do that here in a minute, Chris, but that is the only concern for Bama, because everywhere else, Arkansas, might have the best offensive line in the SEC. I mean, I love KJ Jefferson. I mean, he's statistically, and you watch the film, he's the second best passing quarterback in the SEC behind Hendon Hooker. Mm-hmm. So not Bryce Young. I did a whole film breakdown on Patreon about it. Bryce Young is getting royally screwed by his receiving core. It's not that he's not a talented passer. Although he, again, not to be flip-flopping, because I get accused of being flip-flopped by trolls. Bryce Young is not an elite passer, all right? Mm-hmm. Never has been. I don't think he ever will be. He's never shown it once on film. I'm saying his lack of production on the stuff he is good at is even further down because of the play of the receivers. So I love Trey Knox, the tight end at Arkansas. I mean, I recruited him out of Tennessee. He wanted to play receiver. I told him he was a tight end. Then he didn't really want to hear that, and so we kind of just fell out of love, and then he ended up at Arkansas. And I think he's a really talented, big ass tight end that can cause some mismatch problems.
They have a big receiving core, Zach. Jaden Hazelwood is 6'3", Matt Landers is 6'5", and then Trey Knox is also 6'5". I mean, they are big everywhere. Yeah. And then obviously KJ Jefferson is also a big kid. So it is a really physically imposing, group of skill players.
And Alabama is a lot like Ohio State right now, not with injuries in the secondary, but their corners are young. And they're talented, but they aren't playing at the elite level that Nick Saban expects them to. So this is a game that I've had circled all offseason, and it's a game that I still have circled now, because I trust Nick Saban to fix those problems. I don't know if he's going to fix it by week five. And this is at Arkansas. Arkansas is coming off of a brutal loss to Texas A&M, where they just missed a field goal at the end of the game and lost. I mean, they make that field goal. They're sitting 4-0, about to take on Bama. I feel like that loss, that close loss, has given them an edge. So I am calling an upset in this game. I think Arkansas pulls this one out. I think KJ Jefferson plays outstanding, and I think that ultimately those receivers are the Achilles heel of this year's Alabama team. I think Arkansas wins the game.
Wow. Okay. You know, I guess to help your point a little bit, I wasn't expecting you to choose this side of it. What I was going to say is, you know, Arkansas leads the SEC averaging 5 sacks a game. You and I have both referenced that we're not super impressed with the Alabama offensive line at this point. That feels like something that could be a perfect storm. Again, 5 sacks a game, Zach.
Yeah.
I think that's more than Alabama has on the year.
I mean, it's interesting because it always comes back to it's hard to track stats at this point because
it is super hard. But that's still a lot, played. Though. Mm-hmm.
It is, and honestly, the way I look at it, Arkansas is a better team than Texas. Mm-hmm. Arkansas wants this win worse than Texas because it's interconference. They just lost. I really think that Arkansas is going to pull this out.
So, do you think that coming off of a loss almost makes this game a little bit more dangerous?
Because
like, is this a case where like Bama might not get this? Just feels like a weird game. Like we saw, didn't A&M lose the week before they got Bama? Then they got them and beat them.
Yeah,
and it's, like it's, this feels like that. Like they have the weapons on the outside that can potentially be game breakers.
And the thing is, I love like people in the chat right now and people all year have said Arkansas's defense is not going to hold down Bama's offense. Bama's offense has been fucking atrocious. Jahmyr Gibbs, if they stop Jahmyr Gibbs and don't let Bryce Young scramble for 100 yards, there is no offense at Bama. Now, I say that. We all know the potential on the offensive side of the ball, what it could become, and it may become it this week. Mm-hmm. But we haven't seen it once on film. I have not seen it once on film where I said, damn, this looks like Bama with Jameson Williams and fucking and Mechie and that whole crew of players. I have not seen that yet. Jahmyr Gibbs is a fantastic player. If they can find a way to limit him, mainly in the throw game, he doesn't do a ton in the run game. His biggest explosive plays are out of the backfield. So I really think that if they can just find a way to do that, they don't have to shut down some vaunted dynamic offense. I don't think Bama has that yet.
I don't think that Arkansas wins this game. I do think this is a very dangerous game. Like I think this is kind of the quote unquote this year to Alabama. You know, in terms of like if you're comparing us in that, they also have a cornerback that leads the SEC in interceptions, and part of that is because they generate so many hurries that they end up throwing that ball up because they are the you know they lead the SEC in sacks. So it is a very very dangerous game. And then on the flip side, Arkansas's running back is Rocket Sanders is averaging over 6 yards a carry too. So yeah. They have a really balanced offense. They have like big physical weapons. They're tough as fuck, dude.
Sam Pittman is a tough ass coach, and his program it resembles his personality. It takes on his persona. It's a tough ass football team. They're not as talented as Bama, but that shit doesn't always matter, especially in a game like this.
I mean, that's the one thing that we didn't see from Texas. Like Texas did a great job, but they weren't tough when it came time to be tough. No. And in a low scoring game, 20-19, you need your team to be fucking tough to win. And Texas simply wasn't that. I am very curious to see how Alabama defends. And Pete Golden's done a really good job this year, but how he defends a true dual threat quarterback. Because remember, Hudson Card came in, Zach, and one wheel Hudson, man, he one leg was running all over the place against them. KJ Jefferson is a Jalen Hurts style runner.
He absolutely is. I think KJ Jefferson, this is going to be the game that puts him on the map per se, because I went through all the analytics last year. I can go down here and grab him again. I mean, he was one of the best quarterbacks in the SEC last year, but he got no love because Stetson Bennett won a national championship and Bryce Young won the Heisman. But I mean, if you look at these stats, KJ Jefferson was the best deep ball quarterback last year. He is the best deep ball quarterback again this year. In the country, not the SEC, in the country. And I mean, some of these other, it's just, he's been that guy and no one's talking about him. And I really believe it's a little bit of projection, a little bit of gut feeling. Didn't go well last time I had one, but I have a feeling that this is that moment where people realize KJ Jefferson's a fucking dude. And Arkansas I think they can pull it out. I do. I think Bama right now is fraudulent on offense.
How would you defend Bama? Because I know Arkansas loves to bring the blitz. That's kind of a staple of this new of the style of defense they play. Can you afford to blitz Bryce Young, or would you, as a defensive coordinator, want to drop guys back in coverage?
No, I think you have to unsettle Bryce, but keep him in the pocket. You cannot run. There's certain blitz schemes where you have a liability at containing a pocket. You can't do that against this kid because if he breaks contain, it's done. I mean, he's either going to find a receiver on the run and make a ridiculous throw, or he's going to scramble around for 20 yards. Like, you can't let him out of that pocket. You have to keep Bryce in the – it's simple, right? The formula to beating Nick Saban, you have to – right now, beat this Bama team. keep Bryce Young in the pocket. Don't let him beat you with his legs. And then somehow bottle up Jahmyr Gibbs. He's going to get a couple. Just don't let him take the game over. If you do that, that puts all the pressure in the world on these Bama receivers to show up. And then that's their weakness. So now they're relying on their weakness to win the game. That's the only way to attack this team offensively or defensively.
Yeah, and another thing I'll be really paying attention to is Will Anderson versus the Arkansas offensive line. Because Will Anderson, like, no matter how good of a game plan you have, he can blow up the entire thing very, very quickly. Now, Arkansas's only allowed 6 sacks this year. If they can keep him clean, that's when it gets really, really dicey. Yeah. And then keeping him clean and then, you know, being tough. But, Zach, I got to throw something up, man. We have our menace of the day in the chat. Read it out loud, bro.
Late to the show, but I made it. Busy helping my boss's wife. She's such a great lady. Helping your boss's wife do what?
Nah, he menace of the day. You know what he was doing. That boy Brian's a demon. Okay, Zach, so you are calling Arkansas to
Arkansas wins the football game.
Next game.
Because I said that Bama's going to blow him out. You know it. But I'm just saying. But just like what I see, all I can go based off of is what I see. What I've seen on film, what I've studied, Arkansas will win this football game. But as I started the show with, you can never count out Nick Saban to fix issues. Like he damn sure could have got them fixed. Yeah. Bama's wide receivers are absolutely that bad. Good. Not talent-wise, just how they play. Their spatial awareness, getting route depths, running hard, like shit that you're like mind blown that you even have to say. Like Jermaine Burton doesn't run hard when he runs routes. Mm-hmm. It's gross, to be honest.
Yeah, like he left Georgia and Georgia's passing attack got better with quote unquote lesser athletes, but we know what that means. All right, Zach. Well, first of all, do you think that anybody and puts it in the athletic facilities as like bulletin board material? Like if I cut that one line, do you think it'll end up Nick Saban's office?
Who knows? And I do want to preface it. That I think Bama is going to be the best team in the country at the end of the year, even with a loss here. You have to have faith in Nick Saban, right? Those young corners are going to be playing excellent by the end of the year. And there's no way the receivers are going to keep playing like this. If they do, then they're absolutely fucking not the best. They're not even a top three team in the country. But I have faith that Nick Saban will get that done because he's done it time and time again. I'm talking about this week specifically. Yeah. I think they can lose this game, and I'm predicting that they will. That doesn't mean by the end of the year they aren't the best team in the country.
I think both can be true. Like
both can absolutely be true.
Bama was a top two team last year, but they also lost to Texas A&M,
absolutely,
who was not a top five team.
Right. So both can be true. Again, so
it's given week.
It's not flip-flopping. This is college football. This is how this shit goes. The best team at the end of the year is all that really matters, and I think this week they're susceptible to get upset. Simple as that.
And like we've seen from Nick Saban, almost every single year, excluding the COVID year, they always lose one, Zach. Like that's just kind of how it goes. So just something of note as we move on.
I like that money line parlay. And I said, except Bama, just wait till we get there.
You're a funny guy. All right. Battle of the pretenders. I'm a contender. Staying in the SEC. We got Kentucky versus Ole Miss. Does the winner of this game get you some respect?
Well, Ole Miss is going to win the game, so just mark that down right now. I've said it all year long, just as I've watched Kentucky. I think Will Levis is an above-average quarterback. He's not what they're – I mean, I just saw a list yesterday. C.J. Stroud is number one on draft boards, and Will Levis is number two. Whoever has that fucking draft board needs to be fired immediately.
Mel Kiper.
It was Mel Kiper. Yeah, well, that's even further to the point. He knows more about hair products than football. That's just what it is. Will Levis is a pretender, and I believe that – I think Lane Kiffin gets it done. Simple as that. I think that you look at this Kentucky offense, they're 10th in the SEC yards per play. And mind you, they have played Miami of Ohio, an below average Florida team, Youngstown State, and Northern Illinois. So that's their body of work. They didn't have a game, like a really good game in there. So when I say these rankings, that is with four subpar opponents, unless you really want to call Florida a good, solid opponent, which I don't see that. They're the 10th best offense in the SEC, the second best passing offense in the SEC, right? They're the dead last rushing team in the SEC against fucking Miami, Youngstown State, Miami, Ohio, Youngstown State, Northern Illinois. The dead last rushing offense in the SEC. And statistically, Ole Miss has the second best defense in the SEC behind Alabama. I don't think this is even – going to be, I don't want to say it's going to be a blowout, but I don't see any route to Kentucky winning this game, because Ole Miss, the Lane Kiffin offense, is already doing well. They're already in the top five in the SEC on offense, averaging 6.5 yards per play. The second, third down offense in the SEC. And this is kind of the matchup. I always give out, like, here's where the game is going to be won. When Ole Miss has the ball, they're the second best third down offense in the SEC, and Kentucky is the second best third down defense in the SEC. So that is an even match. I'm giving the nod to Lane Kiffin. Call it bias, call it just, you know, history. Lane Kiffin, his offense is not going to fail on third down. They're just not. Not in this game, at least. Not against Kentucky. Bama, sure. We'll give him that. And then you look at turnover margins. They both turned the ball over 6 times so far. The difference is Ole Miss has created 7 turnovers on defense, and we've talked about Ohio State's lack thereof turnovers. I think they have 1 right now. Ole Miss has created 7. That is what this defense does. So, I guess the other side of this that you have to mention is Ole Miss only played Troy, Central Arkansas, Georgia Tech, and Tulsa, and they struggle with Tulsa. But I just have to call what I see, and I see Kentucky is fraudulent, and I think Ole Miss wins this football game.
No, I'm kind of with you. My thing about Kentucky is they're the most confusing top 10 team I've seen in recent memory, because they do not have dynamic quarterback play, and additionally, they have a poor rushing attack, like you've stated before. They're only averaging 81.5 yards per game on the ground, considering they've played a very weak schedule. So to do that, be that far below 100, and additionally not have a dynamic quarterback like everyone is telling us he is really alarming and concerning. Will Levis looks really cool when he plays football. He does the cool little back pedal, all the arm angles. Like, it looks cool, but it's not productive. The one thing of note, Chris Rodriguez is making he's making his debut. He had 1,400 yards last year. He's a good running back. Just a running game a little bit, but I just don't think they have enough to beat the Lane Kiffin team. Like, to keep up with the Lane Kiffin team, you need to have one of the two, a really good running game or dynamic quarterback play. I think they're 0-2 on those, and I think this is the week they get exposed by a well-coached offense.
You can't win against a legitimate. You could beat Vanderbilt or a bad Florida team, and mind you, that Florida team, that was Anthony Richardson's worst performance he's had probably in a year and a half, maybe not last year, but this year he looked really good against Utah, really good against Tennessee. He looked awful against Florida, and I'm not saying Florida made him look awful. I'm talking about throws just wildly off the mark, inaccurate as shit. Like, he played horribly. So they beat a Florida team that their quarterback was terrible that day, right? That sometimes you can't just compare apples to apples. That Florida team that Tennessee beat was far better than the Florida team Kentucky beat, simply because Anthony Richardson was on that day. So you can't win against a real SEC team with an overrated quarterback that honestly is only inflated because you can't run the ball at all, so he has to throw it. So you have no run game. Your quarterback has to throw it all the time. I broke his game down a week ago. He's absolutely fraudulent if we're talking about him in the upper tier with Bryce Young and CJ Stroud and some of these guys that I think are going to be NFL quarterbacks. And I think this Kentucky is a fraud, plain and simple.
Yeah, and you talked about it. I mean, he's like of the upper echelon quarterbacks that are draft eligible, he's the one that is the worst against the blitz, and Ole Miss is going to bring pressure. Like, they have, you know, good defensive ends of the Kentucky O-line. It's not the greatest. And additionally, I think that Ole Miss is pretty deep on the back end. So I think this is kind of the game where you see, okay, of the two teams, the team that is much less fraudulent is Ole Miss, and I think that's pretty evident. I'm kind of moving forward though, Zach. Unless you have anything left on that one, I think we kind of know.
No, I think the other part is Jackson Dart is the perfect kind of quarterback for Lane Kiffin. I think he operates his system so efficiently. And I honestly, this is going to be a bizarre take. I think he's the better quarterback on Saturday on that field.
Really? Okay. No. I mean, I hear you again. Like, Will Levis just looks cool while throwing the ball. Like, that's literally it. Like, it looks like Aaron Rodgers until you see where the ball lands. So.
Which kind of matters.
It really matters. All right, Zach, I want to move forward a little bit. Baylor versus Oklahoma State. That's another top 10 matchup or top 15 matchup?
It is, because Baylor lost, but if they didn't, it would have been a top 10 matchup.
Yeah, but, you know, this should be an interesting game. I think these are the two best teams in the Big 12. Sorry, Kansas. Sorry, Craig Young.
There's no doubt. I think this is really – Oklahoma State is, I mean, don't get me wrong. We're going to have two conversations here, and this is how I get called a flip-flopper or whatever. On the national stage, Oklahoma State is a non-contender, right? But in the Big 12, you can not be a contender nationally and still win the bitch. That's how bad the Big 12 is. So as I talk about Oklahoma State, I'm going to talk positively. I'm not going back on what I said the other day when I said they are a pretender, because they are on the national landscape. I feel like I got to defend myself all the time now, Chris. Oh,
coach, just be you, man. We fucking
listen. You. Oklahoma State's defense is a defense that is disruptive. Right? They create turnovers. They get to the quarterback. And Spencer Sanders, I think, is an underrated player within the Big 12. I mean, he's almost he's over 900 yards passing already on the year. And I think he's really good in this confine, in this conversation. He's a good quarterback, right? Damn fly in here. I'm going to kill it. I think Oklahoma State rolls and beats Baylor because of those two reasons. You can't, Jesus, bro. Anyways. I think Spencer Sanders has a really good game. I think the defense plays lights out. I think Baylor was a little inflated to begin the year. Obviously, they already lost the game, and I think they'd drop another one here. And I wish it wasn't the case, because I don't know anyone at Oklahoma State, and I have two friends at Baylor, so I'd rather Baylor win. That's how you know I'm not biased. I really wish I could say Baylor, and I probably could have lied and stated a case and figured out how to find stats to make you believe that it was Baylor. But Oklahoma State's a better football team, and I think Oklahoma State has a real shot to win the Big 12 this year.
I do, too. I thought they averaged the most points per game in college football, but I'm being told that maybe it's Tennessee and not them. I'm at 51.7. So they are. I do think they win this game, but it's interesting because Baylor's is a tougher defense. They only average 79.5 rushing yards a game, Zach. So do you trust the Sanders kid to be able to throw the ball all over the place? Because last year he was susceptible to making big time mistakes when he was forced to when he had no run game.
There's no doubt, and he's got a year older. And you're right, Chris. Oklahoma State's the leading the country in scoring. I mean, 51.7 points a game. Michigan's 2, Ohio State's 3. Kansas is tied at 4 with Tennessee.
That's so crazy as hell.
Rock chalk Jayhawk. It's just wild. So you're absolutely right. I think that is what's going to happen in this game.
All right, Zach. Say it, but we're going to move on to the battle of the week. I think, right? Is this the battle of the week?
The battle of the week?
Yeah.
No, I think maybe. I think Ole Miss Kentucky is the one I'm most excited for.
Okay.
And it's the game that means the most. But go ahead.
Wake Forest, Florida State. Is this the respect game for Florida State, who to me, it's quite clear, is the best team in the state of Florida?
Oh, they absolutely. I mean, I think they absolutely are the best team in the state of Florida. I think Florida State is going to just garner more and more respect as this thing goes on. This is a massive game for them playing Wake Forest. But ultimately, I mean, you're talking about this is the best offense in the ACC statistically. Mm-hmm. And they beat LSU. I know LSU's down. Brian Kelly, I get all the excuses. That's a big win for Florida State coming out the gate. And I was thoroughly impressed with what they've done. I've been, I don't want to say a fan, but I've been high on Mike Norvell since he got to Florida State and said he would turn it around. I think Jordan Travis is playing at a very high level right now. And I like Florida State to win this game. This is the game that puts Florida State within the top 25, you know, on the map as a potential contender to knock off Clemson. And I don't know if they can flat out win the ACC, but I'm struggling to find another team that will. Right. Because for me, it's really down to Florida State, NC State, and Miami, Clemson. But I've said it long before, Clemson is fraudulent. I don't know that NC State has the dudes to do it. Florida State's in a weird spot right now where I could really see them gaining momentum and then making a run at it.
Yeah. Johnny Wilson is almost at 300 yards on the year, and he's averaging 20 yards per catch. That's the 6'7" quote unquote Randy Moss motherfucker that plays for Florida State. He's so big and fast and he gets open. And honestly, like that Florida State like offensive game plan deserves more recognition nationally. Like they do a really good job. They have a really good OC and they've been able to prove it on the field. So I do like Florida State there. Zach, how much do you believe in like transitive property? Like looking at how Wake Forest, like if Florida State beats Wake Forest by a greater margin than Clemson beat Wake Forest.
I don't
believe
in that shit at all. Because okay. Here's the issue, right? Wake Forest just came off a heavyweight bout. I mean, they just went toe-to-toe with Clemson and just ran out of gas at the end. To think that that's not going to have a residual effect going into this week is fucking asinine. So they are going to be a beat-up version of themselves. Maybe not dramatically, but it's going to have a little bit of an impact. And Florida State's going to go in that game, a fresher team. And honestly, they're 4-0. They got a lot to play for.
Right. They do. You're right. All right, Zach. Now, this is the clash of the week. NC State is taking on the best player in the ACC, DJ. Clemson. This is a top 10 matchup. Before the season, I called NC State to win the ACC. They look shaky at times, but they're so experienced. They're veteran-laden. They're battle-tested. They're war daddies. Can they beat Dabo's Cousins?
No.
Damn it. That was the greatest intro ever.
It was really good. I just have a feeling, as bad as Clemson's offensive staff is, as bad as their offense has been, I have faith in DJ Uiagalelei to will them to victory at home. If this was at NC State, I would give NC State the nod. I just think that they can't get worse offensively than what they've been. If they just improve a little bit, I think DJ has a chance to start kind of making it known that he is a fantastic player in a shitbag offense. So could I see it happening? Absolutely. I think that Clemson this week is going to do enough, and DJ's going to have a game.
And I need NC State to win this game just because I had the prediction, and I just felt really good about it. It's funny, Devin Leary. You know, hey, have you ever seen Jimmy Clausen and Devin Leary in the same room?
I have not.
No. Hey, they play the exact. Hey,
I think Devin Leary's a good player. I think NC State is a very well coached, senior laden team. Don't forget
War Daddies.
Don't get me wrong. I would not be shocked if they win this football game. I'm not going to put money on it. I'm not calling the upset like I did a year ago. This just feels like to me Clemson's game where they don't Clemson. I think that game is coming up, and it might be a team like Florida State, or it might be a team like Miami. Whoever it could be. I think there's several potential teams. Just for whatever reason, I don't think it's this week.
Do you remember when Dabo Swinney had a meltdown when a reporter asked him about Clemsoning? Remember there was that weird stretch where they would just lose to a random ass team? So the reason I've picked NC State in this game in particular, first of all, I picked them in the preseason, so I'm going to ride with that. Second of all, the same thing you said about Wake Forest kind of being like a little bit depleted. You know, they just had a war and an emotional battle. I think this is kind of the same thing. And can you get up twice? Like in back-to-back weeks, and this is the toughest stretch, I think, on Clemson's schedule until they get Florida State. So I'm looking at this thinking that
– I mean, it's you got a good point. I mean, it's true. Clemson just came out of a heavyweight bout too. So they're susceptible. I mean, this is upset alert, but I think Clemson pulls it out.
And I guess one of the things is I thought Sam Hartman made a really bad mistake in that game, and that's what kind of cost Wake Forest. I don't think Devin Leary will make that mistake is where I'm at. I mean, he didn't miss any training camp. Like he's been around with it. Obviously, I think Sam Hartman played a phenomenal game.
I was going to say, I mean, you can't hold one play over kid's head.
No. I just mean at the end of, he played fucking incredible. You're right. So just kind of the heavyweight bout is the reason I'm rolling with NC State on this one. But Zach, I have nothing else I want to hit today. Are you ready to hit some super chats?
Yeah, let's hit them.
All right, let's get it. Thank you, T. Spiv. Thank you for the five. How many career 30-yard passes or longer has Bryce thrown to wide receivers not named JMO?
That would be a great study.
Mm-hmm. Where he threw the Brian helping his boss's wife. Did we ever get an update on what he was helping her with? The world may never know. Doesn't want to say it on the show. Hey, Arnold, thank you for the two. C-Rod back this week. That's why UK hasn't ran well. Yeah, that's what I referenced. But still, I mean, push up front is one thing. To be only averaging 80 yards a game on the ground is abysmal, especially when, you want to have balance there. And if you don't have balance, you are a pretender in our eyes. And that's what kind of why Zach and I have kind of.
No doubt. And I completely forgot to mention this before the show, and that's my bad. So we got a good at least 8 minutes left of the show. We're going to take all super chats from today's show and tomorrow's show and send them to the Florida Hurricane Relief Fund. It was an idea that one of our generals had in our group chat. I completely forgot to lead the show with it. So every super chat that comes in today and tomorrow's Super Chat Friday. So we always usually get a nice chunk of money on a Friday. All that money, we will cut a check and donate it to the Florida Hurricane Relief Fund, because just also meant to lead with this. Prayers to everyone in Fort Myers. That's a place that I've gone, I mean, for 20 years to vacation there, Naples and Marco Island, just that Southwest Florida. I love that area. And that hurricane was heading towards Tampa, and I said, nah, fuck this. I like Fort Myers, and just turn right and Category 5 laid into it. So prayers to everyone in Florida. I mean, even if you're not in Fort Myers, you're dealing with some insane weather. But so just wanted to send our thoughts to those in Florida and just let you know that any super chats will get donated to, I don't even know what the name of it is, but the Hurricane Relief Fund in the state of Florida for Hurricane Ian.
hurt. All right, Zach, I do have a question, just a recruiting question, because obviously, like, you've been a coach, and, you know, coaches miss on recruits all the time. Did you ever feel like fan bases turning on you for missing on recruits?
No, like our fan base?
Yeah.
No, never. And I mean, I had years where I didn't do as well, but for the most part, I did it. I didn't really have a bad year in recruiting. But that being said, a lot of fan bases turned on me in recruiting for a number of things. Like the one time Tennessee fans turned on me because they thought I was taking a subtle shot at Jarrett Garantano, even though I didn't even fucking know him and had nothing to do with his recruitment and didn't care where he went. Honestly, they thought I was taking a shot at him on a kind of a sub tweet that I sent to Trayvon Grimes, actually, but people thought it was at Jarrett Garantano and it wasn't. I've had Nebraska fans turn on me because their receiver coach like wanted to get in beef with me. Like that same time I was calling out the University of Florida to Trayvon Grimes, right? Tennessee fans, I thought I was talking about them. The Nebraska receiver coach, Keith Williams, thought I was talking about him. All these people thought I was talking about him. The only people that didn't think I was talking about them was Florida. And that's who I was talking about. And it was like, and they all like, I woke up the next day and my Twitter mentions are flooded with Nebraska people talking shit. And I'm like, Nebraska? Like, I kind of like Nebraska. Why is it fuck me? And then sure enough, a couple of people sent me the tweet. This guy was tweeting about me, thinking I was tweeting about him. And I was like, man, this is embarrassing. It's where you think the hot girl's talking about you, but she's really talking about your friend. Like,
yeah,
that's embarrassing.
Through something. I want to throw this up. Thanks, Rod, for the 20, you know, super chat, family and friends in Florida, getting this thing kind of going. We And again, this is to help out the relief fund. Thank you, Tyler. Hurricane fund, go Bucks. Thoughts on University of Michigan at Iowa? Seems like it could be a sloppy game. It's gonna be such an ugly game, I think.
Yeah. It is.
It's gonna be an ugly game, Zach. I'm just gonna keep you on as long as the donations are coming in. I'm just gonna talk to you.
Yeah.
So you are one of the more active coaches in terms of like being like a demon on social media. Like before the menace of sports, but you were a menace on social media. So that's why I followed you, bro. And actually, it's funny because I reached out for an interview like early before we met and never got back to me. It's cool. It's neither here nor there.
I did.
Yeah. I reached out to an interview for you, never got back to me. It's cool though. It's neither here nor there.
When I was coaching.
Right after you got fired, when everything was probably flooded with
the yeah, I must have been drunk that day. I don't know. That was a rough time in my life.
bro, you're good. But did anybody ever say anything to you about your social media activity, like while you were coaching at Ohio State?
Yeah, a couple times.
who takes care of that? Is that Emig that says?
No, I mean, you know, certain people may notice it, may mention something, but ultimately, I answer to the head coach, and I mean. It honestly, I would do things on social media. It was all intentional. I was not some wild card just popping off whenever. Like I would do things intentionally to get a buzz going about whatever. Like the only time that it was kind of ridiculous, I was so furious at Target because I bought an Apple Watch, right? You remember that? I bought an Apple Watch. I brought it home and I realized it was like the wrong one. And I drove right back to Target to return it. And they said that Apple products could not be returned. And I'm like, well, where's the sign that says that? Like right there, it says 14-day return policy. And they wouldn't take the fucking watch back. So I was livid. And I'm like, what can I do in this situation? Like, this is criminal. And so I went after Target on Twitter for like, you know, a good five tweets. And people started making
memes. Anybody spam the chat, Coach Karen.
It really was though. But Ohio State fans were hilarious, man. They found like Black Friday videos of people at Target like running through the store and they're like Buckeye fans at Target now that Coach Zach Smith couldn't take his watch back. Like it was so immature, but I did it. That was the only time I did it unintentionally, but every other time it was intentional shit. And I remember one time when the whole Nebraska and Florida and Tennessee thing happened, I walked in the next morning and Urban goes, so I'm hearing you had a fun on Twitter last night. And I was like, yeah, Coach, I had a good time on Twitter last night. And he was like, what do you do it for? Like, what is that for? And I explained to him like how saying that stuff about Florida, you know, I wasn't directly calling them out, but then I'm on the phone with Trayvon Grimes and we're talking about it because he saw my tweets. He retweeted my tweets. Other recruits saw the tweets. I didn't say Florida was XYZ. I was just like, hey, listen, just make sure when schools sell you on some bullshit that you actually look into, can they do that or have they ever done that for anyone? And don't be an idiot and think you'll be the first one. And then I talked to like three recruits that night about that topic. It was a conversation starter. And what other fan bases do with it, it's not my fucking, not my problem. Yeah. So I was always intentional and Urban liked it. He never would say that, but you could tell he liked it.
Well, as a psychology major, that would be right in his wheelhouse. One throw this one. Absolutely. Up here. Hey, Arnold, thank you for the 10th or an extra 10 for the hurricane relief. Zach, we know your thoughts on the big recruiting areas, you know, South Florida, Georgia, Dallas, you know, Tidewater, et cetera. What is a sneaky hot recruiting spot? Ooh, what place has the gems?
But it's not a secret anymore. But when I went in there, it was a secret. And that was St. Louis. I mean, you never heard anybody going to St. Louis,
bro.
Nobody went to St. Louis, but
50 running backs or something like that.
Man, I went there with from Cam Babb, Cameron Brown. I mean, there was a bunch of other great players that went elsewhere. And then Jameson Williams. Mm-hmm. I mean, going on down, then Mookie Cooper came out, and I had started recruiting him. And then obviously Hartline finished that job. And then the kid transferred to Missouri. But still, he was a highly recruited kid. People were tapping into St. Louis. And it wasn't because of Zeke. Like, Zeke went to a very small school there, like horrible competition. Nobody went, oh, because of Zeke, we should go to St. Louis. Because it was once... Really, I went in there, and then Bama went in there, but collectively, Ohio State and Bama blew St. Louis the fuck up nationally. It had always been big for Missouri's and, you know, regional schools, but national schools didn't really go to St. Louis that much. And we went in there, and it blew up. I mean, blew up. And Ohio State has a nice pipeline with St. Louis because of it. So I guess that would be my answer, though now it's not really a subtle place. I mean, people know about it, but that was my favorite place to go.
Here we go. Here's Andrew for the 5. Hurricane Fun. Thank you. Hey, we appreciate you again. This, like, all of them are going there. Ooh, Chris O, thank you for the 10. Prayers. Yep, shout out to you, Chris. Will Levis, offensive coordinator, told the press that he will be the first overall pick in the NFL draft. Also, Chris needs to sing Gangster Paradise.
Hey, Chris doesn't even know what Gangster's Paradise is.
I do, and I'll not be singing it. I will do
a
lot.
How does it go? Just sing it for me, Chris.
Wait a second. This is not a put Chris on the spot moment.
It's for the hurricane victims, Chris.
Oh, all right. My block, man. We love Coolio. OG. Anyway, Will Levis, R.I.P. number one Coolio. Overall. Yeah. Will Levis, number one overall pick, man.
No. I mean, that's one. Why would you ever say that? I will say, you got to say rest in peace to Coolio, because he had all the suburban white kids singing Gangster's Paradise thinking they were hood.
Mm-hmm. One of them ones. Do you think Will Levis is a better draft prospect than a guy like Sam Darnold? They kind of remind me of each other, like the kind of like they're. It's just cool to watch them play quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, similar. I think that's a great comparison. I mean, I never was a Sam Darnold fan. I never thought he'd be a great player in the NFL. So very similar.
Zach, thank you for the 2. Do you think JSN will drop off for the rest of the season?
I think that it's premature to talk about that decision. And I mentioned it. I don't remember. Was it yesterday's show, Chris? But I just mentioned it. Now Chris has me in all these fucking spaces and all this shit. I don't know when I talk about what, but I know I've talked about this. I think he'll be back in three to four weeks, right? Barring a setback. But when you've already had a setback in a hamstring situation, you have to be cautious how soon you come back, because it's highly likely that if it's not completely healed and healthy, that it'll happen again. And so do I think he's done for the year right now? No. I think the plan is to bring him back in a few weeks. If he comes back in a few weeks and tries to test it out, there's a high percentage chance that he could retweak it. If he does, he's done for the year. It's over. So it's a very fragile and sensitive situation right now, because I'll put it at 50-50 if he ever plays for Ohio State again. And
after that second hamstring injury, it really gets dicey.
It does. And it just... You need a lot of time, a lot of treatment. I know he's killing it in the training room. He's killing it in the weight room, trying to get this hamstring rehabbed and healthy. But you just have to be careful. And then when he does, he's going to be on a pitch count. And Hartline has to stick to that pitch count. If he goes over that pitch count, the percentage chance he injures his hamstring again goes through the roof. We saw that in the Toledo game. Mm-hmm. He had a pitch count. He went over it, popped it again. It's like, you can't keep doing that. So I'm at 50-50 if he plays for Ohio State again. I think if everything goes perfect and well, this current injury will not keep him out for the whole year. But if he retweaks it or re-injures it, it's done.
With JSN, I know that Lattimore had a device on him that kind of monitored his hamstrings. Do you think Ohio State will bring that back? And can you wear? Is it legal to wear that during games?
Oh yeah, Marshawn wore it always.
Okay.
It's just this kind of tape with this electrical wiring that monitors your hamstrings firing, and they absolutely Ohio State if it's a chronic hamstring thing, then they'll do it. That's why Marshawn had to do it, because he had a chronic hamstring issue, and they had to monitor his hamstring 24/7. So one, I absolutely think they will probably utilize something like that. But two, if it's just a hamstring injury and this kid has never had hamstring problems, they're not looking to fix a chronic hamstring injury. They're just looking to fix a hamstring injury. There's a difference.
Okay. Thank you. That's definitely.
I mean, it won't hurt to have a first round receiver out there, yeah, they'll spend any amount of money.
Facts. Mark Dillon, thank you for the 20. Prayers to Fort Myers and the community. Great football town, hidden gems, great tradition. Fort Myers High School, Green Wave. Yeah, hell yeah, hell yeah. Coach Sammy, I don't know how to pronounce the last name. Sirianni, legend there.
Sirianni. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't know who you were talking about. Sammy Sirianni, legend in Southwest Florida. They've had some great players. Dion, you got him on the list.
Oh, yeah.
Richard Young, Sammy Watkins, Dion. Jalen Watkins came to Florida. I've been over there recruiting.
Yeah, shout out to them. Well, hey, we appreciate everybody for kind of tapping in. Got nothing else for today. Obviously, we're donating all the Super Chats to the relief fund, so thank you for throwing those up there. And again, that's out tomorrow's Super Chat. Friday will be as well.
Yeah, so I apologize. I threw that on you late. I meant to throw it out at the beginning of the show, so I will make sure I lead with it tomorrow. Super Chat Fridays tomorrow. Every penny of that will go to the Florida Hurricane Relief Fund. So I appreciate everybody. Good show, Chris. I appreciate you. Menace out.